your immigration status. If you or someone you know has been detained or wants to report ICE, more information is available at CIRLA at 888-624-4752 for legal help and resources. It is bilingual. More information at CHIRLA.org. Hello, and you are listening to Eco Justice Radio on KPFK Los Angeles. We present environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame featuring voices not necessarily heard on mainstream media. Eco Justice Radio acknowledges that we recorded this show on the traditional territory of the Ahachmen people and all of their relatives in the place we call Orange County, California. Welcome, I am Jack Eight. On today's show, War Is Not Green. On the transition to a peace economy, we feature a conversation with Jody Evans, co-founder and board member of Code Pink, a feminist grassroots organization working to end U.S. warfare and imperialism, support peace and human rights initiatives, and redirect resources into healthcare, education, green jobs, and other life-affirming programs. Jody Evans, a co-founder of Code Pink, along with the well-known and often feared by misbehaving politicians, Medea Benjamin, is a longtime activist for peace and justice. Jody has traveled to war zones to advocate for peaceful resolutions and works locally to divest from war. A former official in Jerry Brown's first governorship, she has authored two books, including Stop the Next War Now, and is a board member of the Rainforest Action Network and Women's Media Center. U.S. imperialism is directly connected to hundreds of millions of people's lives throughout the world. Capital accumulation and global inequality, climate change, fascism, the list goes on. The U.S. enforces its violent empire by maintaining almost 800 military bases around the world, despite what nice stories we all try to tell ourselves about this wonderful country we call the United States of America. Each one of these bases contaminates the soil, occupies land. Each base contributes to the U.S. military's project status as the number one institutional polluter in the world, as it unleashes over a billion metric tons of CO2 in the atmosphere, as it destroys the built and natural environment wherever its boots touch the ground. Oh boy. In this episode, we engage with Jody Evans from Code Pink to explore the crucial relationship between war and environmental degradation. We break down the unfortunate realities created by what should be known as the war economy. That is what the U.S. is now and what we have now, what we live and breathe from. It's a war economy, folks. We discuss its devastating impacts on the world's communities and ecosystems and look into the urgent process needed to transition into a peace economy.
Well, welcome, Jody Evans, to Eco Justice Radio. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much for all you do.
Yeah. So, maybe we could start with an introduction to Code Pink's campaign, A War Is Not Green, just to give the broad outlines, because you've been stepping up, trying to make, obviously, Code Pink has been doing advocacy on the anti-war front for a long time, really incredible work, important work. But unfortunately, the environmental community seems to lag. We don't see a lot of environmentalists, and certainly we don't see some of these organizations jumping in and importantly stepping up that. So why look at the U.S. military with the angle of pollution, environmental impacts, and climate change?
Well, let me just start with Code Pink, for starters. And Code Pink started when Bush was frightening the American people into war with color-coded alerts, orange, red, and yellow, to frighten people so he could go to war in Iraq. And so we called Code Pink for peace. And from the beginning, it's been to end war and bring the money home to the life-giving needs of our communities and the planet. Medea and I both are anti-war activists from the 70s, late 60s, and we knew already the destruction of war to the planet. I mean, what had happened in Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia, the verdant landscapes that had been destroyed, that where babies still are born with horrible diseases. So that when, you know, in Iraq, the Battle of Fallujah began, killing, I believe, 100,000 people with the same horrible chemical weapons, that still right now in Iraq, babies are born with deformed, and it's just destroyed planet. Destroyed. And we'd seen that actually in Iraq before the war started, because when the first invasion, when the Bush senior invasion happened, it had already destroyed what had been a landscape of growing crops that could no longer do that. I mean, here in the middle of the Tigris and Euphrates, which had been the birth of civilization, and we know is just like so lush and full of life, we were watching what was happening with weapons and war. And we were, you know, doing protests. And I've been with Rainforest Action Network for 40 years since Randy and Mike started it, on the board for over 20, board chair. And I'm looking at my friends going, where are you? You need to come out and be with us in these marches to end this war. And so I saw it there when my own relationships, my own friendships weren't really showing up. And so I would talk about the cost of war very early. And I remember Michael Kieschnick at, you know, pulling together, like, oh, we have to be with the anti-war activists, and pulling together like a separate contingent to one of our marches, Climate Justice for Peace. But it's always been the struggle of getting people to understand the cost of war. I mean, to me, it's, I don't need numbers, but I realized other people did. And we launched War Is Not Green as part of our work at Code Pink from the very, very beginning, in an attempt to get the climate justice movement to join with us in our marches. And I brought it to the White House when I got arrested with Bill McKibben in 2011. I brought that message when we were, you know, trying to stop the Keystone Pipeline, to remind people that the militarization we meet in resisting the pipelines comes from the militarization that is, you know, supported with your tax dollars. That Pentagon budget is what has created this militarization that we feel as we try to block these pipelines. So after 2011, when 350.org was leading so many marches in New York and in DC for the planet, we were always there with War Is Not Green and bringing our message. One of the big moments where I really got like, what is wrong here, was when Paul Hawken came out with his drawdown book. It had 100 ways to draw down carbon. And I noticed there was no mention of ending war and militarism. And I asked him why, since it's the number one industrial contributor, is it not in the book? What's wrong with you? And he said, well, there's no study. And I'm like, what do you mean? He said, well, the book is full of places where there were studies, so we could turn to numbers. So I turned to the Cost of War Project at the Brown University and said, what about the cost of war to the planet? And Netta Crawford, who started the project, and by the way, it's amazing, it's Brown University, and it's when you need to talk about numbers, like the fact that 5 million people were killed in the war on terror. As you know, as we look at this Palestinian war, think about how silenced the deaths of 5 million people were just in the last 20 years. She did that, but then she did the numbers on the cost of war to the planet. And now she's at Oxford, because like no one had done that. Can you imagine? No one had even looked at the numbers. So she did, and she got them finished just in time for COP in Glasgow. And so, of course, we had the message there, and Netta came and marched with us. And so at a march with 100,000 climate activists in Glasgow, I've got my War Is Not Green stickers, and I'm handing them out. And I would say, did you know that war is the greatest industrial contributor to climate change? No one in this climate march knew. They were so happy to know. They took the sticker. It's not like people don't want to know, but we don't. And why? Because, as we know, all wars are driven by lies and distortions and burying the truth. And this was an intentional burying of the truth by the United States of America at a COP, saying, no, we are going to hide these numbers. They're not going to be included in the count of the carbon footprint. So intentional dumbing down of the people, which we see all the time about every issue that matters to us. And people power is the only thing that has ever made real change. And that's why, you know, from the anti-war movement, which gets 0.00000001% of philanthropic funding, we're turning to the climate movement to say, we need to join together because we have a common cause to end war and militarism to save the planet. Which is why we have one of our current campaigns of, yes, let's come together and let's say, you know, end war.
So after long wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the role of the U.S. military has become more offensive. And people clearly, as you've noted, they don't understand. They don't, they're not following. There's massive propaganda. The media seems to support these things. These are necessary. They're wars for democracy, blah, blah, blah. We're going to get more into some unpacking that. But I think let's just start with, how is the U.S. military contributing to climate change at the carbon emissions level? Paint that picture up for us. I know.
Well,
it's like massive. It's massive.
Well, first of all, let's start with, it's $2 trillion this year, not what you're told. It's actually, in U.S. reported numbers, $2 trillion that is spent to directly destroy the planet. If you think of everything the military does, there isn't anything they do that isn't destructive to the planet. And let's just start with what these wars are for. They're for resources, all of them. So let's just start there. Massive pollution, the use of bombs and missiles and other munitions that release massive amounts of toxins into the environment, and explosives with heavy metals and white phosphorus and depleted uranium, which contaminate the soil and the water and the air for decades. So, you know, starting there. But then there's the destruction of ecosystems, you know, not just the soil, but the use of these explosive weapons in urban areas creates millions of tons of rubble, which can contain hazardous materials like asbestos and industrial chemicals. In rural areas, the bombing of craters disrupt, you know, drainage patterns and degrade soil quality, making the land unusable for agriculture for decades. I mean, still, we're, you know, 50 years away from some wars where it still isn't usable. Then there's, you know, environmental terrorism, like we saw with, you know, blowing up pipelines and industrial sites. What we're watching right now, oil fields, industrial sites, water infrastructure, you know, the pollution that causes. Just look in Palestine right now. Look at what's happening to what they're doing in Iran, when they're bombing these infrastructures. So,
I want to get more specific into some of these different entanglements that we have. But
there's, you know, just one thing can unleash 500 metric tons of pollutants into the atmosphere daily. I mean, these are numbers you can't even comprehend. But then we go to unexploded ordnances like landmines and bombs and that are there for decades, as we know from Cambodia and Laos, and the fact that they're doing it again in Ukraine,
right.
That the U.S. is
absolutely
doing things that were made illegal, that people got peace prizes for getting rid of, are happening again. But I think we should also talk about the military emissions, right? One of the things about, you know, why it's so damaging is there's nothing that matches the military emissions. It's for everything that your tax dollar pays for. This is it. The military emissions off the chart, close to, you know, what whole country, dozens and dozens of countries emit in a year. Resource depletion, the quantities of resources and rare earth minerals and critical minerals. And I mean, it's just like, everything that goes into weaponry. And I just want to say, you know, just a couple days ago in Alaska, an F-37 went down. It's $200 million, but like on the way down, what it's doing to the planet, it's the same cost in destruction to the planet. The habitat destruction. You know, we don't talk about military training exercises. How many places where we have bases are there military training exercises that consume vast amounts of land, destroy them? It's like a scorched earth deforestation tactic that's going on where there aren't even wars, especially right now in the Asia Pacific, where the U.S. is planning on going to war with China. They're destroying huge local ecosystems and places where indigenous peoples have burial sites. And I mean, the biodiversity loss is incredible. And then there's the chemical and biological weapons legacy that, you know, like Asian origin Vietnam, but like PFAS, the chemical that, you know, never goes away, is one of the great tragedies of all these bases, that over 800 bases that United States has around the world. So the footprint, the bootprint, we say, of the military industrial complex is profound.
Yeah. So, well, I guess maybe there would be some who just said, can the U.S. military be a force for low emissions? How about biofuel, Land Rovers, electric tanks, solar panels on the roofs of military headquarters? Is that the answer? I mean,
oh no, that's horrible. That's like greenwashing on steroids.
We see it. So yes, as you know, the U.S. military is completely unparalleled in size, aircraft, land vehicles, naval power. Look at aircraft alone. We've got a bigger arsenal of aircraft than the next seven countries combined. All of these vehicles, aircrafts, and ships are on missions to patrol land, sea, and air, like regularly.
Okay, but one sec. I mean, I just want to go back to General Eisenhower. And, you know, I went to North Korea with 35 women to walk across the DMZ for the reunification of the Koreas. And to, you know, like, how do we create peace? As we build bridges and we create relationships, we have diplomacy, something the United States doesn't even invest in anymore. And I learned some really tragic things because I was clueless, like every American, about what happened in the Korea War. I actually learned researching while I was in North Korea, because we were trying to figure out who we needed to speak to safely walk across the DMZ. We had a week in North Korea to figure that out. And of course, I thought it was the South Koreans, but they don't control the DMZ. The United States does. It was put in place by President Eisenhower. In my research, I found out that when he became president and learned about what had happened in North Korea, I just get choked up just even trying to tell this story, is that he started crying because it was so horrific. 80% casualties and a full-on destruction of everything, that generals would testify to Congress saying there is nothing left to bomb. Can you imagine? Mm. And so he said, just stop it. And it took a while, and they just, in Washington, D.C., drew a line across Korea and said, this is North Korea and South Korea. After 80% casualties. Imagine. I mean, whenever somebody laughs at North Korea, I shame them. Like, who would you be? Who would you be if you had witnessed 80% casualties and the entire destruction? Well, we're watching that in Palestine again. We're watching it again. So while I was there and seeing this and learning about this, I really got to understand why President Eisenhower said, beware the military congressional industrial complex. We call it the military industrial complex, but he said the military congressional industrial complex. From then, it has been Congress benefiting from and driving wars. So what did he say to Kennedy when Kennedy became president? He said, your only job is to keep the brake on the military congressional industrial complex. And he got murdered for it.
Yeah.
So since then, it's been growing, growing, growing. But I mean, and you know, World War II really didn't ever win. It stopped. It didn't stop because the global war to end fascism, which is what the rest of the world calls it, and the countries that lost the most people, that's what they call it. I think 82 million people died in the global war to end fascism. But the heads of the United States and Britain spoke to each other and said, let's just let the communists and fascists kill each other. So the losses were most heavy in Russia and China fighting fascism, while the United States was fueling Japan with 95% of their steel and oil to go after China. So that intention to get rid of communism never ended after D-Day. And more, tens of millions of more people have been killed since because they were communists. So this is why, you know, during the Obama administration, when he said, you know, there's such a thing as a good war, which I told him to wash his mouth out with soap for even saying such a thing. I came back from Afghanistan with 4,000 signatures from women and said, you can't escalate. And he did. What Afghanistan was in 2009 and what it is now is because of him. They had reintegrated. It was becoming a healthy country. And he put it backwards, even further than what Bush had done. So anyway, and it was that same year we took 1,000 people to Gaza in 7 trips. And then right after that was Ferguson where we went. And I was just like, when I saw tanks in the street in Ferguson that had been paid for by these people's tax dollars. So I was just like, okay, how do we end this? And it was then that I was like, oh, this is a war economy. What I live inside of is a war economy culture, and it is destructive, extractive, and oppressive. And it is in everything. It is in our culture. It is in our, I call them addictions, in the way we behave. It is our culture. It is literally the air we breathe, the water we swim in, but we don't even talk about it because it's so who we are. And
I'm going to interrupt. Excuse me for interrupting, but we need to take a break, but that's a good point that we're going to be discussing to really putting a finer point on it. So we'll be back in a second with Jody Evans.
Hey, listeners, quick break here. We hope that you're enjoying Eco Justice Radio. We air on KPFK Los Angeles and KPFT Houston. Stay connected by subscribing to Eco Justice Radio on all major podcast apps and visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, to check out previous shows and guests and get connected with us on social media. Today, you're listening to War Is Not Green on the Transition to a Sustainable Peace Economy. I am your host, Jack Eit. We feature a conversation with Jody Evans, co-founder and board member of Code Pink, a feminist grassroots organization working to end U.S. warfare and imperialism.
So we're back, and we were talking about militarism and imperialism and the sort of backhanded approach that the U.S. leaders, the leadership, we talk about Congress, we talk about now the imperial presidency, they're all in it together, and somehow the military contractors and the money that's associated as war is a racket, I think Smedley Butler said. Yes. A long time ago. And, yeah. And that racket just seems to grow. The U.S. military is the enforcer and protector of global capital. So here's the thing. You've already sort of been talking about it in general terms. How do we get off the war economy in a way that might make sense for activism here? Because we need to build the voices to understand what it takes to speak out, because this is what we do. We've organized massive rallies. It's tough to organize anything against Trump, who wants to change the Department of Defense to the Department of War. He just wants to say what it is.
Appreciate his telling the truth.
Exactly. So how do we speak out against this and more about what the answer is, meaning the peace?
Cool. So there's two things. I have two parts of myself. I scratch at, shine a light on, and educate people about the war economy, from the presidency down to the corporations to the Congress. It's like a whole thing. It's the war economy. It operates together. And what we do at Code Pink is we give people tools to help other people understand what it is so that they will be inspired to engage, because it's the engagement that's going to stop it. It's like, how do we, because to stop this is to cut the Pentagon. But, you know, these guys are owned by the Pentagon. So we have to keep educating people to build the movement, the people power to stop it. And it's not about elections. It's about that we show up and we make them so uncomfortable. You can look and see how uncomfortable we make members of Congress. They're so uncomfortable that they like come after us with everything they have. So keep making them uncomfortable. Like the activists that just shut down Padilla's and Schiff's office this week on funding weapons for Palestine. So it's that level of uncomfortable is what we have to go back to. It's not collectivism. It's showing up with our bodies and saying no. And let me just say, you know, the members of Congress who've been so proudly Zionist are starting to like be sheepishly walking away from it because they see the polls and they know they're on the wrong side. We, as the people, need to stay on the right side, need to be educated, need to be building. But the other thing is this war economy, it takes us in, it takes all the activism in and it uses us. We're just, I call it parsley on the plate of their game. And we have to take ourselves off the plate of their game and be building a future. And when you're inside of the war economy, it has 23 addictions. It forces you into behaving like that make you extractive, destructive, oppressive, and dehumanizing of others. And we have a project at Code Pink called the Peace Economy, which is to pivot from the war economy to the peace economy. Because if we just stay engaged in the war economy, it will stay. We'll just be in an eddy. We'll just be running around in circles, doing what we do, but we won't be going anywhere. If we want to go somewhere, we have to lead. We have to build it. We have to cultivate it. And that is a peace economy. The giving, sharing, caring, thriving, relational, resilient economy without which none of us would be alive. It's what Indigenous peoples know and teach, but it's got habits. And if we practice those habits and create local peace economy projects, and I say we have to do these because there is a tsunami coming. It is the effects of the war economy, global climate change, global inequality, AI, and fascism. And I say you have to build an ark to get through this. There's no apocalypse, but an ARC is a peace economy. And I've already seen it work in LA where we've started so many projects that were right there for the fires. And instead of people moving into flight, they moved into connectivity and support because the structures were there. And what could have been ugly became, in most cases, quite beautiful. In most cases, where people go is what the culture is. And where they went was into care and support and how do we take care of each other. So if you're creating that container where you live, it will be there for whatever's to befall us.
So, well, thank you for coming on today. It's impressive.
Well, Jack, thanks to 350.org, but for being one of our key partners from the very beginning. And, you know, people can find ways to engage at codepink.org. /wing if you want to go to our Wars Not Green campaign, you know, /Palestine if you want to see what to do on Palestine. But also we have peaceeconomy.org. And I just want to say, think about what you're doing. Think about where you are being used by the war economy and how you are a tool of it, even unbeknownst to you. And spend time taking yourself off the war economy. At Code Pink, we never go at a problem like this. That's, you know, playing their game. We say we're disarming. It's why we're in pink. It's why we're like, we come up with skits to help people off of this and onto how do we understand how we're being used by propaganda and war, like the propaganda that's driving a war on China. China's not our enemy. China wants to be our friend. And we need to be friends with everyone. So when you see somebody saying they're your enemy, think twice about why, what that information is, what it serves, and why you should believe it. And instead, remembering that all wars are driven by lies, they're driven by making an enemy, and that all wars are destructive to the planet and murder people.
Yeah, that enemy creation is a powerful thing that people fall victim to all the time. So once again, thank you for what you've done with Code Pink and with Medea Benjamin and that is confused. So thank you for coming on Eco Justice Radio today. Really,
thanks for having me, Jack. See you in the streets. See you all in the streets. That's where we belong. You know, this is not okay on any level.
Not okay.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website, ecojusticeradio.org, and subscribe to our podcast. This has been Eco Justice Radio and our show, War Is Not Green, on the transition to a sustainable peace economy. Thank you to Jody Evans, and thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please connect with us on social media at Eco Justice Radio, SoCal350, and Wilder Utopia. If you like what you've heard and you want others to be informed, subscribe and share the episodes. You have been listening to Eco Justice Radio, a project of SoCal 350, executive producer, myself, Jack Eid, co-host Carrie Kim, an engineer and original music by Blake Quake Beats. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.
Support comes from CAP UCLA. presenting Third Coast Percussion and Solar Nader on December 6th at 8 p.m. at the Nimoy. Third Coast Percussion pays tribute to the late Zakir Hussain with Murmurs in Time, his final commissioned work. The program also includes solo tabla and new works by Jesse Montgomery, Tigran Hamasyan, and Jay Lynn, honoring Hussain's enduring legacy at CAP UCLA. More information and tickets available at cap.ucla.edu and kpfk.org.
Hello, this is Martin Sheen, and you're listening to KPFK.